Lorne always talked about being trapped by himself, by the choice he made, till it felt like he wasn't living his own life. Like something was behind him, beating him on. Something to the sides, winnowing his path. In the end, all his love, all his kindness, family, it didn't matter. He died as he lived. Cassius sees more than just the doubt in my own theory. He knows I could talk about Mustang or Severo or Victra changing, being different, but he sees the undercurrent because in many ways his thread in life is the most like my own. "You think you're going to die," he says. "As Lorne used to say, the bill comes at the end, and the end is on its way." He watches me gently, his whiskey forgotten, the intimacy deeper than I intended. I've touched a part of his own mind. Maybe he, too, has felt like he's marching toward his own burial. "I never thought about the weight on you," he says carefully. "All that time among us? Years? You couldn't talk to anyone, could you?" "No. Too risky. Kind of a conversation killer. Hello, I'm a red spy." He doesn't laugh. "You still can't. And that's what kills you. You're among your own people and you feel a stranger." "There it is," I say, raising a glass. I hesitate, wondering how much to confide in him. Then whiskey talks for me. "It's hard to talk to anyone. Everyone is so fragile. Severo with his father, with the weight of a people he hardly knows. Victor thinks she's wicked and keeps pretending like she just wants revenge, like she's full of poison. They think I know the path here, that I've had a vision of the future because of my wife. But I don't feel her like I used to. And Mustang..." I stop awkwardly. "Go on. What about her?" "Come on, man. You killed my brothers. I killed Fitchner. It's already awkward." I grimace at the weirdness of this little moment. "She's always watching me," I say. "Judging. Like she's keeping a tally of my worth. Whether I'm fit."
"For what?"
"For her, for this, I don't know. I felt like I proved myself on the ice, but it hasn't gone away." I shrug. "It's the same for you, isn't it? Serving at the Sovereign's pleasure when Aja killed Quinn. Your mother's expectations. Sitting here with the man who took two brothers from you. You can have Karnas. He must have been a treat at home."
"He was actually fond of me as a child," Cassius says.
"I know, hard to believe, but he was my champion. Included me in sports, took me on trips, taught me about girls, in his way. He was not so kind to Julian, though." "I have an older brother. His name's Kieran."
"Is he alive?"
"He's a mechanic with the Sons. Got four kids."
"Wait, you're an uncle?"
Cassius says in surprise. "Several times over. Kieran married Io's sister."
"Did he?"
"I was an uncle once. I was good at that." His eyes go distant, smile fading, and I know the suspicions that rest heavy on his soul. "I'm tired of this war, Darrow." "So am I. And if I could bring Julian back to you, I would. But this war is for him, or men like him, the decent. It's for the quiet and gentle who know how the world should be but can't shout louder than the bastards."
"Aren't you afraid you're going to break everything and not be able to put it back together?"
he asks sincerely.
Yes, I say, understanding myself better than I have for a long time. That's why I have Mustang. He stares at me for a long, odd moment before shaking his head and chuckling at himself, or me. I wish it was easier to hate you. There's a toast, if I ever heard one. I raise my glass, and he his, and we drink in silence. But before he parts with me that night, I give him a holocube to watch in his cell. I apologize in advance for its contents, but it's something he needs to see. The irony is not lost on him. He'll watch it later in his cell, and he will weep and feel lonelier still. But the truth is never easy. Chapter 51 Pandora. Hours after Cassius has left me, I'm woken from a restless dream by Severo. He calls my datapad with an urgent message. Victra has engaged Antonia in the belt. She requests reinforcements, and Severo's already got his gear and has Holiday mustering a strike team. Mustang, the Howlers, and I hitch a ride on the remaining Telemannus torch ship, the fastest left in the fleet. Seffi tried to come along, eager for more combat, but even after the victory at Io, my fleet rides on a razor's edge. Her leadership is needed to keep the Obsidians in line. She's a peacemaker, and the punchline of Severo's favorite new joke. What do you say when a 7.5-foot-tall woman walks into a room with a battle axe and tongues on a hook? Absolutely nothing. Personally, I'm more worried that only a handful of strong personalities bind this alliance together. If I lose one, the whole thing might crumble. We go full burn, straining the ships to reach Victra. But an hour before we arrive at her coordinates amidst a thicket of sensor-disrupting asteroids, we receive a brief encoded message that is patented Julii. Bitch captured, Kavax free, victory mine. We shuttle over from the lean Telemannus torch ship toward Victra's waiting fleet. Severo picks nervously at his pant leg. Victra's won a great victory. She set out in pursuit with 20 strike craft. Now she possesses nearly 50 black ships. Fast, nimble, expensive craft. Just the sort you'd expect of a trading family. None of the hulking behemoths the Augustuses and the Bellona favor. All the black ships bear the weeping, spear-pierced son of the Julii family. Victor waits for us on the deck of her mother's old flagship, the Pandora. She's splendid and proud in a black uniform, with the Julii sun upon her right breast, a fiery orange line burning down the black pants, gold buttons sparkling. She's found her old earrings. Jade hangs from her ears. Her smile is broad and enigmatic. Mike Goodman, welcome aboard the Pandora. Beside her stands Kavax, injured yet again, with a cast on his right arm and res flesh coating the right side of his face. The daughters, who raced ahead to find him, flank him now, and laugh as Kavax bellows a hello to Mustang. She tries to maintain propriety as she rushes to him and tosses her arms around his neck. She kisses him once on his bald head. Mustang! He says happily. He pushes her back and lowers his head. Apologies, deepest apologies. I cannot stop being captured. Just a damsel in distress, Severo says.
It seems the case,
Kavax replies. Just promise me this time is the last time, Kavax, Mustang says. He does. And you're injured again.
A scratch, just a scratch, my liege. Don't you know I've magic in my veins?
I have someone who's been dying to see you, Mustang says, looking back up the ramp. She whistles, and inside the shuttle, Pebble lets Sophocles go. Claws clatter behind me, then under me, as he races through Severo's legs, almost knocking my friend down, to jump onto Kavax's chest. Kavax kisses the fox with open mouth. Victra cringes. "Thought you were in trouble," Severo grunts up at her. "I told you I had it under control," she says.
"How far behind is the rest of the fleet, Darrow?"
2 days. Mustang looks around.
"Where's Daxo?"
"Daxo is dealing with rats on the upper decks. Still some hardcore peerless left. It's been a bitch digging them out," Victor says. "There's barely any wreckage," I say. "How did you do this?"
"How? I am the true heir of House Julii," Victor says proudly. "According to Mother's will, and according to birth. Antonia's ships, legally my ships, were run by stool pigeons, paid allies. They contacted me, thought the whole fleet was right behind my little harrying party. They begged me to spare them from the big, bad Reaper."
"And where are your sister's men now?" I ask.
"I executed 3 and destroyed their ships as an example to the rest. The disloyal praetors which I could capture are rotting in cells. My loyalists and Mother's friends have taken command."
"And will they follow us?" Severo asks gruffly.
"They follow me," she says.
"That's not the same thing," I say. "Obviously, they're my ships." She's one step closer to taking back her mother's empire. But the rest can only be done in peace. Still, it gives her an eerie independence. Just like Rogue had when he gained ships after the Lion's Reign. It will test her loyalty, a fact Severo does not seem entirely comfortable with. Mustang and I frown at one another. "Property is a funny thing these days," Severo says. "Tends to have opinions." Victra bristles at the challenge. Mustang inserts herself.
"I think Severo means to say, now that you have your revenge, do you still intend to come with us to the core?"
"I don't have my revenge," Victor says. "Antonia still breathes."
"And when she does not?" Mustang asks.
Victor shrugs.
"I'm not good with commitment."
Severo's mood sours even more. Dozens of prisoners fill the ward's cells, most gold, some blue and grey, all high-ranking and loyal to Antonia. A canyon of enemies who glare out at me from the bars. I walk alone down the hall, enjoying the feeling of so many golds knowing I'm their captor. I find Antonia in the second-to-last cell. She sits against the bars of the cell that separates her from the adjacent one. Aside from a bruised cheek, she's as beautiful as ever. Mouth sensual, eyes smouldering behind thick eyelashes, as she broods under the brig's pale lights. Her willowy legs are folded under her, black-nailed hands picking at a blister on her big toe.
"I thought I heard the Reaper swing," she says with a seductive little smile.
Her eyes drift slowly up the length of me, eating every centimetre up.
"You've been downing your protein, haven't you, darling? All big again."
"Don't fret. I'll always remember you as a weeping little worm." "You're the only bone riders left alive in the fleet," I say, looking at the cell adjacent hers. "I want to know what the Jackal's planning. I want to know his troop positions, his supply routes, his garrison strength. I want to know what information he has on the Sons of Ares. I want to know what his plans are with the Sovereign. Are they colluding? Is there tension? Is he making a move against her? I want to know how to beat him. And most of all, I want to know where the bloody damn nuclear weapons are. If you give me this, you live. If you do not, you die. Am I clear?" She didn't flinch at the mention of the weapons. Neither did the woman in the adjacent cell.
Crystal clear,
Antonia says. I'm more than willing to cooperate. You're a survivor, Antonia. But I wasn't just talking to you. I slam my hand on the bars of the cell next to hers, where a shorter, dark-faced gold sits watching me with raw eyes. Her face is sharp, like her tongue used to be, hair curly and more golden than last time I saw her, artificially lightened, same with her eyes. I'm talking to you too, Thistle. Whichever of you gives us more information gets to live.
Devilish ultimatum. Antonia applauds from the ground. And you call yourself a Red.
I think you are more at home with us than you are with them.
Isn't that right?
She laughs.
It is, isn't it?
You have an hour to think it over. I walk away from them, letting them stew in it.
Darrow, Thistle calls after me. Tell Savro I'm sorry. Darrow, please.
I turn and walk back to her slowly. You dyed your hair, I say.
Little Bronzy just wanted to fit in.
Antonia purrs, stretching her long legs. She's more than a head and a half taller than Thistle.
Don't blame the runt. Unrealistic expectations.
Thistle stares out at me, hands clutching the bars.
I'm sorry, Darrow. I didn't know it would go so far. I couldn't have...
Yes, you did. You're not an idiot. And don't be pathetic and claim to be one. I understand how you could do it to me, I say slowly. But Sevro was supposed to be there. So were the Howlers. She looks at the ground, unable to meet my gaze. How could you do that to him? To them? She has no answer. I touch her hair with my hand. We liked you, the way you were.
Chapter 52 Teeth. I join Sevro, Mustang, and Victra in the Briggs monitoring room. Two techs lean back in ergonomic chairs, several dozen hollows floating around them at once.
They said anything yet? I ask.
Not yet, Victra answers. But pot's stirred and I've cranked the heat.
Sevro's watching Thistle on the hollow display. Did you want to talk with Thistle? I ask.
Who?
He asks, raising his eyebrows.
Never heard of her.
I can tell he's wounded by seeing her again. Wounded even more because he tells himself to be hard. But this betrayal by one of his own howlers cuts at his core. Still, he plays it off. Not sure if it's for Victor, for me, or for himself. Probably all three. After several minutes, Antonia and Thistle drip with sweat. Per my recommendation, we've made the cells 40 degrees Celsius to amp up their irritability. Gravity is jacked up a fraction too, just outside the realm of perception. So far, Thistle's done nothing but weep, and Antonia has been touching the bruise on her cheek to see if any lasting damage has been done to her face.
You need to come up with a plan,
Antonia says idly through the bars.
What? Plan,
Thistle asks from the far corner of her own cell.
They're going to kill us, even if we give them information. You weeping little cow. Pick your chin up. You're embarrassing your scar. You're House Mars, aren't you?
They know we're listening, Sevro says. At least Antonia does. Sometimes it doesn't matter, Mustang replies. Highly intelligent prisoners often play games with their captors. It's the self-confidence that can make them even more vulnerable to psychological manipulation because they think they're still in control.
You know this from your own extensive personal experience being tortured?
Victor asks.
Do tell me about that.
Quiet, I say, turning up the hollow's volume.
I'm going to tell them everything,
Thistle saying to Antonia.
I don't give a shit about this anymore.
Everything? Antonia asks. You don't know everything.
I know enough.
I know more, Antonia says.
Who would ever trust you? Thistle snaps. Matricidal psychopath. If you even knew what people really thought about you...
Oh, darling, you can't really be so stupid.
Antonia sighs sympathetically.
You are so sad to watch.
What do you mean?
Use your head, you little simpleton. Just try, please.
Slag you, bitch.
I'm sorry, Thistle, Antonia says, arching her back against the bars. It's the heat.
Oh, syphilitic madness.
Thistle mutters, now pacing, arms wrapped around herself.
How? Base. It's in the upbringing, really.
I consider pulling Thistle out, extracting the information she's willing to give.
Could be a ruse, Mustang says. Something Antonia designed in case they were captured.
Or maybe my brother's play. That'd be like him, to sow misinformation. Especially if they'd just let themselves be captured.
Let themselves be captured?
Victor asks.
There's over 50 dead girls in the morgues of this ship who would disagree with that statement.
She's right, Severus says. Let it play. Might make Antonia open up more when we get her in a room. Antonia closes her eyes, resting her head against the bars, knowing Thistle will ask what she meant by use her head. And sure enough, Thistle does.
What did you mean when you said, if I tell them everything, I'd have no more use?
Antonia looks back at her through the bars.
Darling, you really haven't thought this through. I'm dead. You said it yourself.
I can try to deny it, but... my sister makes me look like the village cat. I shot her in the spine and played acid drip with her back for almost a year. She's going to peel me like an onion.
Dara wouldn't let her do that.
He's red. We're just devils in crowns to him.
He wouldn't do that.
I know a goblin that would.
His name's Severo.
Is it?
Antonia couldn't care less.
Point's the same. I'm dead. You might have a chance, but they only need one of us alive for information. The question you have to ask yourself is, if you tell them everything, will they still keep you alive? You need a strategy. Something to hold back, to barter incrementally.
Thistle approaches the bars that separate the women.
You're not fooling me.
Her voice becomes brave.
But you know what? You are done. Darrow is going to win, and maybe he should. And you know what? I'm going to help him.
Thistle looks up at the camera in the corner of her cell, taking her eyes off Antonia.
I'll tell you what he's planning, Darrow. Let me make...
Get her out, Mustang says. Get her out now.
No,
Victor murmurs beside me, seeing what Mustang sees. Severo and I look at the women in confusion, but Victor's already halfway to the door.
Open cell 31,
she shouts to the techs before disappearing into the hall. Realizing what's happening, Severo and I rush after her, knocking over a green who's adjusting one of the holoscreens. Mustang follows. We break into the hallway and run to the brig security door. Victor's hammering on the door, shouting to be let in. The door buzzes, and we fly in behind her, past the confused security guards who are gathering their gear, and into the cell block. Prisoners are shouting, but even then I hear the wet thwop, thwop, thwop before we make it to Antonia's cell and see her hunched over Thistle, her hands through the bar that separate their cells, drenched in blood, fingers gripping Thistle's curly hair. The shattered remnants of the top of the howler's skull bend around the bar as Antonia jerks Thistle's head toward her and against the bars between them one last time. Victra shoves open the magnetized cell door. Antonia rises, grisly deed finished, bloody hands held in the air innocently as she bestows a little smirk upon her older sister.
Careful, she taunts. Careful, Vicky. You need me. I'm the only one left with information to sell. Unless you want to stumble into the jackal's maw, you'll...
Victra breaks Antonia's face. I can hear the brittle snap of bone from 10 meters away. Antonia reels back, trying to escape. Victra pins her to the wall and beats her, machine-like and eerily quiet, elbow pumping back, driving from her legs, just as they teach us. Antonia's fingers claw at Victra's muscled arms, then go limp as the sound becomes wet and muddy. Victra doesn't stop, and I don't stop her, because I hate Antonia, and that dark little part of me wants her to feel the pain. Severo shoves past me and launches himself at Victra, pinning her right arm back and choking her with his left. He sweeps her legs and takes her backward to the floor, locking his legs around her waist, immobilizing her. Released from Victra's hold, Antonia flops sideways. Mustang lunges forward to keep her head from cracking on the sharp edge of the welded metal bed pallet. I kneel and reach through the bars to feel Thistle's pulse, though I don't know why I bother. Her head is caved in. I stare at it, wondering why I'm not horrified at the scene. Some part of me has died. But when did it die? Why did I not notice? Mustang is shouting for a yellow, the guards picking up the call. I shake myself. Severo's letting go of Victra. She coughs from where he restrained her, shoving him away angrily. Mustang bends over Antonia, who's now snoring through her shattered nose. Face a ruin, bits of teeth littering mashed lips. Except for her hair and sigils, you can't even tell she's a gold. Victra leaves the room without looking at her, pushing through the grey guards so hard two of them fall down. Victra! I call after her like there's something to say. She turns back to me, eyes red, not with rage, but with a fathomless sadness. Knuckles frayed open.
I used to braid her hair,
she says forcefully.
I don't know why she's like this. Why I am.
Half of one of her sister's broken teeth protrudes from the meat between her middle and ring knuckle. She pulls the tooth from her knuckles and holds it up to the light like a child discovering sea glass on the beach, before shivering in horror and letting it clatter to the steel deck. She looks past me to Severo.
Told you.
Later that day, as the doctors tend to Antonia, the sons go through Thistle's personal effects in her suite aboard the torch ship, the Typhon. Under a false bottom in the cabinet, they find the stinking, cured fur of a wolf. Severo chokes up when Screwface brings it to him. Thistle cut her down, Clown says as the remaining original howlers loiter around the room. Mustang gives them space, watching from the wall. Pebble, Screwface, and Severo are with us. When Antonia was crucified by the jackal at the Institute, Thistle cut her down. I'd forgotten, I say from her desk. Severo snorts.
What a world!
Remember when you had her fight Leah when Leah couldn't skin the sheep? Trying to make her tough, Pebble says with a little laugh. Severo laughs too.
Why are you laughing?
Clown asks. You were still off eating mushrooms and howling at the moon back then.
I was watching, Severo says. I was always watching.
That's creepy, boss, Screwface says drolly. What were you doing while you were watching? Wanking in the bushes, obviously, I say. Several grunts. Only when everyone was asleep. Gross. Pebble wrinkles her nose and tucks the howler cloak in her pack. Howl on, little thistle. The kindness in her eyes is almost too much to bear. There's no recrimination, no anger, just the absence of a friend. Reminds me how much I love these people. Clown and Pebble leave, hand in hand, Screwface taunting them all the while. I smile at the sight, as Severo and I linger behind. Mustang still hasn't moved from her place at the wall. What did Victra mean when she said, "told you"? I ask. Severo glances at Mustang. Ah, it doesn't matter anymore. He acts like he's going to leave, but hesitates. She called it off. It? I ask. Us.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Severo, Mustang says. She's going through a lot right now. Yeah. He leans against the wall. Yeah. It's my fault, Prolly. Told her... He makes a face. I told her I... loved her before the battle. You know what she said? Thank you, Mustang guesses. He flinches. No. She just said I was an idiot. Maybe she's right. Maybe I just read too much into it. Just got excited, you know. He looks at the ground, thinking. Mustang nods at me to say something. Severo, you're a lot of things. You're smelly, you're small, your tattoo taste is questionable, your pornographic proclivities are... eccentric. And you've got really weird toenails. He swivels to look at me. Weird? They're really long, mate. Like, you should trim them. Nah, they're good for hanging on to things. I squint at him, not sure if he's joking, and carry on as best I can. I'm just saying, you're a lot of things, boyo, but you are not an idiot. He makes no sign of having heard me. She thinks she had poison in her veins. That's what she was talking about in the brig. Said she'd just ruin everything, so better just to cut it off. She's just scared, Mustang says, especially after what just happened. You mean what's happening? He sits against the wall and leans his head back against it. Starting to feel like a prophecy. Death begets death begets death. We won at Jupiter, I say. We can win every battle and still lose the war, Severo mutters. The jackal's got something up his sleeve and Octavius only wounded. Scepter Armada is bigger than the Sword Armada, and they'll pull the fleets from Venus and Mercury. We'll be outnumbered 3-1. People are gonna die. Probably most of the people we know. Mustang smiles. Unless we change the paradigm. Chapter 53 Silence. After Mustang details the broad strokes of her plan to us, and we finish laughing, analyzing and dissecting its flaws, she leaves us to ruminate on it and departs to rejoin the rest of the fleet with the Telemannuses. We stay behind with Victra and the Howlers to interrogate Antonia and oversee ship repair. The beautiful Antonia is a thing of the past. The damage she suffered was superficially catastrophic. Left orbital bone pulverized. Nose flattened, crushed so brutally they had to pull it out of her nasal cavity with forceps. Mouth so swollen it makes a hissing sound as air goes between her shattered front teeth. Whiplash and severe concussion.
The ship doctors thought she was in a ship crash until they found the imprint of House Jupiter's lightning crest in several places on her face. "Marked by justice," I say. Zebra rolls his eyes.
"What? I can be funny.
Keep practicing." When I question Antonia, her left eye is a swollen, black mass. The right peers out at me in rage, but she cooperates. Perhaps now because she thinks threats against her carry a bit of merit, and that her sister is just waiting to finish the job. According to her, the Jackal's last communique stated he was making preparations for our attack on Mars. He gathers his fleet around retaken Phobos and recalls Society ships from the Cannes and other naval depots. Similarly, there's an exodus of gold, silver, and copper ships away from Mars to Luna or Venus, which have become refugee centers for disenfranchised patricians. Like London during the First French Revolution, or New Zealand after the Third World War, when the continents brimmed with radioactivity. The problem with Antonia's information is that it's difficult to verify. Impossible, really, with long-range and intraplanetary communication essentially back to the Stone Age. For all we know, the Jackal might have prepared contingency information for her to give us, in case she was captured under duress. If she uses that information, and we act on it, we could easily be falling into a trap. Thistle would have been crucial to our understanding of information. Antonia's murder of her was horrific, but tactically very efficient. Holliday joins me on the bridge of the Pandora as I try to make that contact. I sit cross-legged on the forward observation post, attempting to log into Quicksilver's digital data drop again. It's late night, ship time. Lights dimmed. Skeleton crew of blues manning the pit below, guiding us back to the rendezvous with the main fleet. Shadowy asteroids rotate in the distance. Holliday plops down beside me. "Fortify thyself," she says, handing me a tin coffee mug. "That's nice of you," I say in surprise. "Can't sleep either." "Nah, hate ships, actually."
"Don't laugh."
"That's got to be inconvenient for a legionnaire."
"Tell me about it. Half of being a soldier is being able to sleep anywhere."
"And the other half?"
"Being able to shit anywhere."
"Wait, and to accept stupid orders without going manic." She taps the deck.
"It's the engine hum. Reminds me of wasps."
She wiggles off her boots.
"You mind?"
"Go on." I sip the coffee.
"This is whiskey.
You catch on quick." She winks at me boyishly. She nods to the datapad in my hands. "Still nothing?" "Asteroids are bad enough, but Society is jamming everything they can."
"Well, Quicksilver gave them a run for it."
We sit quietly together. Hers isn't a naturally soothing presence, but it's the easy one of a woman raised in the agriculture backcountry, where your reputation's only as good as your word and your hunting dog. We're not alike in many ways, but there's a chip on her shoulder, I understand.
"Sorry about your friend," she says.
"Which one?"
"Both. You know the girl long?"
"Since school.
She was a bit nasty, but loyal."
"Till she wasn't," she says.
I shrug in reply. "Julia is rattled."
"She talk to you?" I ask.
She laughs lightly. "Not a chance."
She pops a laced burner into her mouth and lights up. I shake my head when she offers me a drag. The ship's air ducts hum.
"Silence is a bitch, isn't it?"
she says after a while.
"But I guess you'd know that after the box."
I nod. "No one ever asks me about it," I say. "The box."
"No one asks me about Trig."
Do you want them to?
Nah.
I never used to mind it, I say. The silence.
Well, you fill it with more things when you get older.
Wasn't much to do in Lycos, except sit around and watch the darkness in Lycos.
Watch the darkness. That's so badass sounding.
Smoke jets out of her nose.
We grew up near Corn. Bit less dramatic, shitloads of it as far as you could see. I'd go stand in the middle of it at night sometimes and pretend it was an ocean. You can hear it whispering. It's not peaceful. Not like you'd think. It's malevolent. I always wanted to be somewhere else. Not like Trigg. He loved Good Hope. Wanted to enlist at the local precinct for policing duty, or be a game warden. He'd be happy kicking it in the backwater till he was old, drinking with those idiots at Lou's, going hunting in early morning frost. I was the one who wanted out, who wanted to hear the ocean, see the stars. 20 years of service to the Legion. Cheap price. She mocks herself, but it's curious to me that she's choosing to open up now. She found me here. At first I thought it was because she came to console me, but there's already whiskey on the squat woman's breath. She didn't want to be alone. And I'm the only one who knew Trigg, even a little. I set my datapad down. I told him he didn't have to come with, but I knew I was dragging him along. Told Mom that I'd take care of him. Haven't even been able to tell her he's dead. Maybe she thinks we both are.
Were you able to tell his fiancée? I ask. Ephraim, right?
You remembered.
Of course. He was from Luna. She watches me for a moment.
Yeah, F's a good one.
Was with a private security firm in Imbrium City. Specialized in high-value property recovery. Art, sculptures, jewels. A real pretty boy. They met at one of those themed bars when we were on leave from the 13th. Venusian beach regalia. F didn't know about Trigg and me. That we were with the Sons and all. But I got a hold of him after we rescued you from Luna when I was out on a supply run. Used a web cafe. About a week after I told him Trigg was gone, he sent a message saying he was going off-grid, joining the Sons on Luna. Haven't heard from him since. I'm sure he's all right, I say. Thanks. But we both know Luna's a cluster of shit right now. She shrugs. After a moment of picking the weightlifting calluses on her palms, she nudges me. I want you to know you're doing good. I know you didn't ask, and I'm just a grunt, but you are. Trigg would approve.
Yeah. And he'd piss his pants if he knew we were marching on...
She's cut short as the hollow above us beeps softly, and one of the comm blues calls up to me. I scramble to pick up my datapad. A single message is being broadcast across all frequencies into the belt. Our first contact with Mars since we went through the asteroid belt the first time.
Play it, Holiday says.
I do, and a recording appears. It's a gray interrogation room. A man's covered in blood, shackled to a chair. The jackal walks into frame to stand behind him.
Is that... Holiday whispers beside me.
Yes, I say.
The man is Uncle Nero.
The jackal holds a pistol in his hand. Darrow! My bone riders found this one sabotaging beacons in deep space. Really is tougher than he looks. Thought he might know your mind, but he tried to bite off his own tongue instead of talking to me. Irony for you.
He walks behind my uncle. I don't want a ransom. I don't want anything from you. I just want you to watch. He lifts up the pistol. It's a slender grey slip of metal the size of my hand. The blues in the pit gasp. Severo rushes onto the bridge just as the jackal points the gun at the back of my uncle's head. My uncle lifts his eyes to look into the camera.
Sorry, Darrow, but I'll say hello to your father for...
The jackal pulls the trigger, and I feel another part of me slip away into the darkness as my uncle slumps in his chair.
Turn it off,
I say numbly, the past flooding into me. Nerol putting a frysuit helmet on my head as a boy, tussling with him at the laurel tide, his sad eyes as we sat beneath the gallows after Eo's hanging, his laugh.
Timestamp puts it at 3 weeks ago, sir.
Virga, the comm blue, says quietly,
we didn't receive it because of the interference.
Did the rest of the fleet get this? I ask quietly.
I don't know, sir. Interference is marginal now. And it's on a pulse frequency. They've probably already seen it.
And I told Orion to keep all ships scanning in case we got lucky. It will leak. Oh, shit. Severo mutters.
What?
Holiday asks. We just set fire to our own fleet. I say mechanically. The fragile alliance between the high colors and low will shatter from this. My uncle was nearly as beloved as Ragnar. Nerol is gone. Just like that. I feel helpless. I shudder inside. It's not real yet.
What do we do? Severo asks. Darrow. Holiday, wake the howlers, I say. Helmsman, max thrust to rear engines. I want to be with the main fleet in 4 hours. Get me Mustang and Orion on the comm. Telemannus is too.
Holiday snaps to attention.
Yes, sir.
Despite the interference, I reach Orion over the comm and tell her to seal off all the ship bridges and to isolate control of the guns in case anyone decides to take a pot shot at our gold allies. It takes nearly 30 minutes for the Blues to connect me with Mustang. Severo and Victor are with me now, along with Daxa. The rest of his family is on their ships. The signal is weak. Interference causing static that wavers across Mustang's face. She is moving through a hall. 2 golds with her.
Darrow, you've heard,
she says, seeing the others behind me. 30 minutes ago.
I'm so sorry.
What's happening?
We received the communique. Some jackass tech pimped it to all the sensor chiefs,
Mustang confirms.
It's on the ship hubs throughout the fleet. Darrow, there's already movement against high colors on several of the ships. 3 golds on Persephone were killed 15 minutes ago by Reds, and one of my lieutenants opened up on 2 obsidian who tried to take her. They're dead.
Shit's hitting the fan, Severo says.
I'm evacing all my personnel back to our ships.
There's gunshots in the background behind Mustang.
Where are you? I ask.
On the Morning Star.
What the hell are you doing there? You have to get off.
I still have men on here. There's 7 golds in the engine deck for logistical support. I'm not leaving them behind.
Then I'm sending my father's guard,
Daxo growls from his family's torch ships.
They'll get you out.
That's stupid, Severo says.
No, Mustang snaps. You send gold knights in here, and this turns into a bloodbath we don't recover from.
Darrow, you have to get back here. That's the only thing that might stop this.
We're still hours out.
Well, do your best. There's one more thing. They've stormed the prison. I think they're going to execute Cassius.
Severo and I exchange a look.
You need to find Sephi and stay with her, I say. We'll be there soon.
Find Sephi? Darrow, she's leading them.
Chapter 54 The Goblin and the Gold. My assault shuttle lands on the auxiliary deck of the Morning Star, where Mustang was supposed to meet us. She's not there. Neither are the gold she was rescuing. A coterie of sons of Ares waits for us instead, led by Theodora. She carries no weapon, and looks out of place surrounded by the armored men, but they defer to her. She tells me what's happened. My uncle's death sparked several small fights that escalated into shootings on both sides. Now several ships roil with conflict. Mustang has been taken by Sephi's men, along with Cassius and the rest of the high-color prisoners, Dara. Theodora announces, assessing the rest of my lieutenants.
Gory damn savages,
Victor mutters.
If they kill her, this is done.
They won't kill her, I say. Sephi knows Mustang's on her side.
Why would she do this?
Holliday asks.
Justice,
Victor says, drawing a look from Severa. No, I say. No, I think it's something else altogether.
Gory damn marvelous.
Victor nods back to space.
Looks like the Telemannises are intent on slagging this all up.
Another shuttle taxis into the hangar behind us. We gather as it lands. Storming down the ramp before it even gets down, jumping to the deck, is the whole Telemannis clan. Daxo, Kavax, Thraxa, two other sisters I haven't met, land heavily behind them. Armed to the teeth, though Kavax's arm is still in a sling. Behind them come 30 more of their house golds. It's a bloody damn army.
They're going to get us all killed,
Holliday says. At my side, Severo blinks up at the disembarking war party.
Death begets death begets death,
he murmurs.
Kavax, what the hell are you doing?
I ask as his family crosses the hangar.
Virginia needs our help,
he booms, not breaking his pace until I cut him off, blocking his way deeper into the ship. For a moment, I think he'll go through me.
We will not leave her to the mercy of savages.
I told you to stay on your ship. Unfortunately, we take orders from Virginia, not you, Daxo says. We know the ramifications of being here, but we will do what we must to protect our family.
Mustang even told you not to storm here with knights. The situation has changed,
Kavax rumbles. You want this to turn into a war. You want our fleet to shatter. The fastest way you do that is marching in here with a show of gold force.
We will not let her die,
Kavax says.
And what if they kill her because of you?
I ask. That's the only thing that gives him pause.
What if they cut her throat when you storm in there?
I step close, so he can see the fear on my face too, and I can speak just loud enough for Daxo to hear as well.
Listen to me, Kavax. The problem with that is that you leave the Obsidian only one choice. Fight back. And you know they can.
Let me handle this, and we'll get her back. Don't, and we'll be standing over her casket tomorrow. Kavax looks back to his lean son, always the moderating influence, to see what he thinks. And to my relief, Daxo nods.
Very well, Kavax says, but I will go with you, Reaper. Children, await my summons. If I fall, come with all fury.
Yes, father, they say.
Breathing a sigh of relief, I turn back to my men.
Where's Severo?
Severo snuck away while we argued, to what purpose I don't know. We rush after him through the corridors, Victor behind us. Holliday leads, taking information from other sons of Ares in through the optic implant in her eye. Her men have spotted the mob in the main hangar. They're holding a trial for Cassius, for the murder of several dozen sons of Ares and, of course, Ares himself. No sign of Mustang. Where is she? She was supposed to stay out of sight. Meet us, if she could. Did they catch her?
Worse.
When we reach the corridor that leads to the hangar, there's such a press of people that we can barely get through, shoving reds and obsidians out of the way as I pass. They're all shouting and pushing. Over their heads, near the center of the hangar, I see several dozen obsidian and reds astride the 20-meter-high walkway that spans part of the hangar, high over the crowd. Sephi's at their center. Seven golds hang dead from the walkway, suspended by rubber cable ligature, feet dangling 5 meters above the crowd, scalps hewn off. Oriate's spines are tougher than average humans. Each of these men and women would have died horribly over several minutes from cerebral anorexia, watching the crowd beneath them curse and spit at them, and hurl lug nuts and wrenches and bottles. Blood clots in a long ribbon cover their chins to their chest, tongues removed by Sephi the Quiet. Cassius and several other prisoners await their own executions upon the walkway, kneeling beside their captors, bloody and beaten. Mustang is not with them, thank Jove. They've stripped Cassius to the waist and carved a bloody sling blade across his broad chest.
Sephi!
I shout, but I can't be heard. Can't see Severo anywhere. There's more than 25,000 in a space meant for 10. Many are armed, some wounded from the battle the week prior, all pressing into the hangar to watch the execution. The obsidian stands titanic amidst the masses, like great boulders amidst a sea of low colours. I never should have condensed most of the wounded and rescued crews into this hotbed of grief. The crowd has realized I'm here now, and they part for me and begin to chant my name as if they think I've come to see justice done. The barbarity of it chills me. One of the men holding Cassius down is a green tech who gave me coffee on Phobos. Most of the others I don't recognize. One by one, those sons nearby recognize my presence. The quiet spreads around me.
Sephi!
I snarl.
Sephi!
At last she hears me.
What are you doing?
What you will not, she calls down in her own language, not in wrath, but acceptance that she performs an unsavory but necessary deed. Like a spirit of vengeance has drifted up from hell. Her white hair hangs long behind her. Her knife is bloody from the tongues it has claimed. And to think, I vouched for her. Let her name this ship. But just because a lion lets you pet it doesn't mean it's tame. Kavax is horrified by the scene. He's almost ready to call his children, and would if Victra did not grip his arm and talk him down. There's fear in her eyes, too. Not just at the sight above, but at what could happen to her here. I shouldn't have brought the goals with me. There's moments in life when you're walking ahead so intent on your task that you forget to look down until you feel knee-deep in quicksand. I'm right there, now, surrounded by an unpredictable mob, looking up at a woman with the blood of Alia Snowsparrow running through her veins. My only defense, a small circle of Sons of Ares and Golds. Holiday's pulling a scorcher. Victra's razor moves beneath her sleeve. I was too brash in storming in here. All this could go so wrong so quickly.
Where is Mustang?
I call up to Sephi.
Did you kill her?
Kill her? No. The daughter of the lion brought us from the ice, but she stood in the way of justice, so she is in chains. Then she's safe.
That's what this is, I call up. Justice? Is that what was given to Ragnar's friends, who your mother hanged from the chains of the spires?
This is the code of the ice.
You're not on the ice, Sephi. You're on my ship.
Is it yours?
This doesn't sit well with the low colors among the crowd.
We paid for it in our blood. As did we all, I say. What about the ice was good? You left that place because you knew it was wrong. You knew your ways were shaped by your masters. You said you'd follow me. Are you a liar now?
Are you? You promised my people they would be safe.
Sephi bellows down to me, pointing her axe, the weight of loss heavy upon her.
I have seen the works of these people. I have seen the war they make, the ships they sail.
Words will not suffice. These golds speak one language, and that is the language of blood. And so long as they live, so long as they speak, my people will not be safe. The power they have is too great.
Do you think this is what Ragnar wanted?
Yes.
Ragnar wanted you to be better than them. Than this. To be an example. But maybe the Gulls are right. Maybe you are just killers. Savage dogs. Like they made you to be.
We will never be anything more until they are gone.
She says down to me, voice echoing around the hangar.
Why defend them?
She drags Cassius toward her.
Why weep over one who helped kill my brother?
Why do you think Ragnar gripped your hand instead of the sword when he died?
He didn't want you to make your life about vengeance. It's a hollow end.
He wanted more for you. He wanted a future.
I have seen the heavens, I have seen the hells, and I know now that our future is war,
Sephi says.
War until they fade in the night.
She drags Cassius toward her and lifts her knife to carve out his tongue, but before she does, a pulse fist fires and knocks the weapon from her hands, and Ares, lord of this rebellion, slams down on the walkway wearing his spiked helmet of war. The obsidians recoil from him as he straightens, dusts off his shoulders, and lets the helmet slither back into his armor.
What is he doing?
Victra asks me.
You dumb shit!
Severo sneers.
You're touching my property!
He stalks across the bridge towards Sephi.
Psst! Get away!
Several Valkyrie bar his way. He stands nose to chest with them.
Move, you albino sack of pubic hair!
The obsidian moves, only when Sephi tells her to. Sephiro walks past the bound golds, tapping their heads playfully as he goes.
That one's mine, he says, pointing at Cassius. Get your hands off him, lady!
She doesn't move her knife.
He cut my father's head off and put it in a box. And unless you want me to do the same to you, you'll do me the courtesy of letting go my property.
Sephi backs away, but does not sheathe her knife.
It is your blood debt. His life belongs to you.
Obviously!
He shoos her away.
Stand up, you little pixie!
He barks at Cassius, kicking him with his boot and hauling him up by the cable around his neck.
Have some dignity. Stand up.
Cassius rises to his feet, awkwardly, hands behind his back, face swollen from the beatings. The sling blade livid on his chest.
Did you kill my father?
Severo flicks him on his broad chest.
Did you kill my father?
Cassius looks down at him. No measure of humor to the man, just pride. Not the vain sort I've seen in him over the years. War and life have drained that vigorous spirit from him. This is the face, the bearing of a man who wants nothing more than to die with a little dignity.
Yes,
he says loudly.
I did. Glad we cleared that up.
He's a murderer, Severo shouts to the crowd. And what do we do to murderers? The crowd roars for Cassius's life, and Severo, after making a show of cupping his ear, gives it to them. He shoves Cassius off the edge of the walkway. The gold plummets till the cable around his neck snaps taut, arresting his fall. He gags, feet kick, face reddens. The crowd roars hungrily, chanting Ares' name. Mobs are soulless things that feed on fear and momentum and prejudice. They do not know the spirit in Cassius, the nobility of a man who would have given his life for his family, but was cursed to live while they all died. They see a monster, a 7-foot-tall former god, now mostly naked, humbled, strangling on his own hubris. I see a man trying his best in a world that doesn't give a shit. It breaks my heart. Yet I do not move, because I know I'm not witnessing the death of a friend, so much as I'm witnessing the rebirth of another. My company does not understand. Horror stains Kavix's face, Victor's too. Even though she held little pity for Cassius all this time, I think she mourns the savagery she sees in Severo. It's an ugly thing for any man to bear. Holliday pulls her weapon, eyeing the Reds nearby who point to Kavix, but they're missing the show. I watch in awe of Severo as he bounds up onto the railing, arms wide, embracing his army. Beneath, Cassius dangles and dies, and the crowd beneath makes a game of seeing who can launch themselves high enough to pull his feet. None succeed. My name is Severo Aubaca, my friend cries out. I am Ares. He thumps his chest. I have killed 44 golds, 15 obsidian, 113 greys with my razor. The crowd roars in approval, even the obsidians. Jove knows who else with ships, railguns and pulse fists, with nukes, knives, sharp sticks. He trails off dramatically. They slam their feet. He beats his chest again. I am Ares. I am a murderer, too. He puts his hands on his hips. And what do we do to murderers? This time no one answers. He never expected them to. He grabs the cable from the neck of one of the kneeling gulls, wraps it around his own neck, and looking to Sethi with a demented little smile, winks and backflips off the railing. The crowd screams, but Victor's stunned gasp is the loudest. Severo's rope snaps taut. He kicks, choking beside Cassius. Feet scrambling, silent and horrible, face turning red on its way to purple like Cassius's. They swing together, the goblin and the gold, suspended above the swirling crowd that's now stampeding, trying to get up the ladder to the walkway to cut Severo down. But in their madness they overload the ladder, and it bends away from the wall. Victra's about to launch herself into the air on her grav boots to save him. I hold her down. Wait. He's dying, she says frantically. That's the point. It is not a boy who dangles on that line. It is not a broken-hearted orphan who needs me to pick him up. It's a man who has been through hell, and now believes in the dream of his father, in the dream of my wife. It's a man I would die to protect, even as he dies to save the soul of this rebellion. Kavix is transfixed, watching Sethi, who stares down at the curious scene. Her obsidian are just as confused. They glance to her, searching for leadership.
Ragnar believed in his sister, in her capacity to be better than the world that was given them, one in which there is no such thing as mercy, no such thing as forgiveness. Silently, she hefts her axe and swings it into Severo's cable, and then, reluctantly, Cassius's. Somewhere, Ragnar is smiling. Both men tumble through the air to be caught by the swirling crowd beneath. Kavax has not moved since Severo jumped, watching Sethi with a profound look of confusion, still with his hand on the comm to call his children, but I lose him in the crowd. The Sons of Ares and Howlers have formed a tight circle around their leader, shoving others back. Severo hacks for breath on all fours. I rush to him and kneel as Holliday helps Cassius, who wheezes on the ground to my left. Pebble drapes her howler cloak over his body. "Can you talk?" I ask Severo. He nods, lips trembling from the pain, but his eyes are all fire. I give my arm and help him stand. I hold up a fist, demanding silence. Sons shout the others down till 25,000 breaths balance on the beating heart of my little friend. He looks out at them, startled by the love he sees, the reverence, the wet eyes. "Darrow's wife," Severo croaks, larynx damaged. "His wife," he says more deeply, "and my father never met. But they shared a dream. One of a free world. Not built on corpses, but on hope. On the love that binds us. Not the hate that divides us. We have lost many. But we are not broken. We are not defeated. We fight on. But we do not fight for revenge for those who have died. We fight for each other. We fight for those who live. We fight for those who don't yet live."